The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast is back for its second season, and a pretty exciting season it should be. Your Milwaukee Brewers made a couple significant offseason splashes. You know about these by now. The signing of Lorenzo Cain, the trade for Christian Yelich, a couple bullpen arms, a couple starting pitcher additions. It's been kind of a crazy offseason. As of Tuesday, we have 29 days to go before the season opener in San Diego. Spring training is well underway in Arizona. My name is J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'll be your host this year, but the stars of the show are Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers beat reporters Todd Rosiak, Tom Hodricourt, embedded in Phoenix. Gentlemen, how are things faring in Arizona?
Does that answer your question?
What is that? I don't even know what I just heard.
There's a diet Mountain Dew. Sorry to this one. Not a beer.
Well, that's too bad. We're recording this in the evening, so it's beer o'clock somewhere. I presume you're only an hour behind us, so I presume you're in the same boat.
Correct.
I know it's been unseasonably cold there a little bit this year. It approached 50 degrees in Milwaukee early this week, so we're thinking about baseball and spring. Did I actually see that you guys bought some hats from Tim Dillard down there?
Yeah, I lined it up with Dillard last night. Seriously, it's so cold in the press box at Maryvale that I'm wearing dual hoodies at the same time. So I've got a hoodie on and then a zip-up hoodie over it with both hoods on during the game. And my fingers are literally like so cold this morning when we were trying to write in the press box that I had to go down to the field to watch some batting practice just to stand in the sun to warm up. So Dillard was nice enough to sell us some of those stocking caps, and they actually came in handy. We were all wearing them in the press box at one point during the game. So if that gives anybody an idea of how chilly it is, that probably paints a good picture. I don't expect any sympathy from anybody up there, but when you come down packed with nothing but shorts and t-shirts and stuff, and all of a sudden you're wearing the one pair of pants that you packed like 2 weeks in a row, it's not much fun. So,
well, I did take a peek at the weather. It does look like you guys are going to get into the 70s here by the end of the week, at least the upper 60s at the very least.
Heat wave. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, though. We're a little worried about that.
So you're hanging out with WWE Giants. You're buying hats off Brewers relievers, and it's only been the first week so far. So let's get into what's going on the field. We've got a lot to talk about, especially about that starting pitching. That's sort of the biggest storyline since the acquisition of Cain and Yelich, which definitely got people talking. But now I think the attention has turned to the starting rotation. Does it have enough firepower at this point? And we will talk about that a little bit. But for starters, Tom, I'm curious if there's anything that you guys can glean from these first couple weeks, the first few games. Obviously, pitchers aren't going their full allotment of innings. Batters are only taking an at-bat or two. Is there anything that you guys can take away from the first couple weeks of spring training?
Absolutely not. There's the first few spring training games, the batters are getting one or two at-bats. The pitchers are throwing one inning and coming out. So nothing means anything yet. Health is the main thing. They just want to keep getting through day by day without people getting hurt over the course of 6 weeks. That's often the biggest issue. So we'll learn more, as we go along. But the thing that's very different this spring from the start of the rebuild a few years ago is there's just not many jobs to be won. There's going to be very few position player openings, if any. They have more players than they know what to do with, especially in the outfield. And it's going to be real interesting to see how that shakes out. There's two rotation spots after Zach Davies, Chase Anderson, and Jolys Chacin. So two spots there, but there's like six guys vying for them. With a large discrepancy in experience going all the way from rookies to Giovanni Gallardo, who's been in the big leagues 10 years, including most of them with the Brewers. Then in the bullpen, we were talking with Craig Counsell earlier today about that. He plans to break camp with eight relievers, which, not the maximum allowed by law, but close to it if you want to have any bench at all. And they consider six of those spots taken. And so, and there's at least 10 guys trying to get those two remaining spots. So there's way, way, way more players and capable players than there are jobs to be won, which shows you how far they've advanced this rebuild. Because last year, just about everybody was fighting for a job, and they had no idea what was going to happen with most guys. But a lot of those guys have turned out to be keepers so far. And then, as you mentioned, JR, with adding Yelich and Kane and Shashin and some relievers, Albers and Boone Logan, there's just not a lot of jobs to be won. So if everybody stays healthy, if we could fast forward to the last week of camp, not only might we finally get into the 70s and 80s, we would start seeing some decisions from general manager David Stearns and manager Craig Counsell. So we'll just keep pushing forward till we get to the big decisions to come.
You know, like I said, everybody's sort of waiting on maybe one of these, the big three free agent starting pitchers to sign, maybe in Milwaukee, being Jake Arrieta, Lance Lynn, or Alex Cobb. Maybe there's a trade to be made for a starting rotation spot. I've, as a Brewer fan, been trying to convince myself that guys like Chacin, Giovanni Gallardo, I mean, even Wade Miley, if you want to get into the depth of the starting rotation, that that will suffice, that they'll be able to have a pretty credible starting rotation with what they have now. Is it a mistake to just think that there's another move coming? I mean, at some point you got to say, this is the team that they've got and that's what they're going to work with. Or do you still really suspect that there's something coming up here in the, down the pipe?
We've talked a lot about this while we've been down here. And, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, there's some pretty good guys that are still out there. But I think at this point, the Brewers are prepared to basically go into the season with what they have. I think they feel pretty confident in some of the younger guys that would need to step up and fill those last spots in the rotation, expecting some improvement from some of them, but also with one eye on the market and watching and seeing what's going on. If all of a sudden, you know, Jake Arrieta is willing to accept a, you know, a 3-year, $60 million deal or something like that, or if Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb, you know, their price comes down to 2 years, $20 million or something like that, I would think that the Brewers would probably be in the market for that. Who knows what the likelihood is of that? Maybe at this point, these guys are going to start getting a little bit more desperate and be a little bit more open to those kinds of deals, realizing that they're not going to get the huge money that they thought they were at the start of the offseason. But I think as of this point, I think it seems like they're perfectly content to go into the season with what they have. And knowing that guys like Chase Anderson, Zach Davies, Chacin are relatively proven, doing the things necessary to take that next step this year, and then hopefully getting, you know, out of that group of the young guys, like I mentioned, getting some performance from guys like Giovanni Gallardo or Wade Miley. You know, if one of those two guys steps up, they could be in pretty decent shape, and then maybe in the market during the season, assuming they're in the hunt to make some sort of move as time goes on. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks. We're certainly keeping one eye on the transaction wire and Twitter and everything else and talking to people and trying to see what's going to happen, because I know you're not the only one who's wondering about that stuff. It's always an interesting topic, and we'll definitely try our best to stay on top of it.
Seems like one of the reasons this has been so slow, this free agent market, is because teams are just smarter and they're not spending these frivolous multi-year contracts that they used to be. Tom, do you think the Brewers, though, in the situation they are, where they're one of these few teams that are competing now, we know that because of these trades they made or moves they've made, we know that they're competing. They have an opportunity on the front end to be really good here in the next couple of years with so many teams laying back a little bit. Do you think maybe that the Brewers should maybe go out there and spend, even if it means the back end of that contract might be a bit of a bummer because they've got this window now, 2-3 years, where they could be competitive?
Well, it depends what the price is, as Todd just said. And, you know, if Arrieta truly wants to get Darvish money or higher, I don't see the Brewers doing that. You know, the Brewers right now look like they're headed for about a $90 million payroll. The last 2 years, they've been right at the bottom of 60. So they've bumped it 50%, a lot of that having to do with Kane and Yelich, but then some internal raises as well. So if they gave an Arrieta $25 million a year and got up to 115. That is like the absolute maximum I've ever seen him be at, and with no flexibility moving forward. And they like flexibility so they can make moves in late July or August if they're in the pennant race. So I don't think they want to totally hamstring themselves there. So, you know, it's real easy for everybody else to spend their money. but they'd like to keep some flexibility going forward. They still have this year and two more years on Ryan Braun's contract for about $20 million a year. Kane, you know, signed for 5 years and $80 million. Yelich's salary is going to be going up. Other salaries on their payroll are going to be going up as their guys get into arbitration. So, you know, if you could convince them that Arrieta is going to put him in the World Series, they'd bring him in tomorrow and give him his money. But they're trying to stick with the plan as best they can long term. If they blew it up and went for it now and then made it so they couldn't spend any money in future years, they'd start losing guys already. So they got to be careful about stuff like that. I know Brewers fans don't want to hear it, but they cannot spend money like the Cubs can. The Cubs' payroll is probably already around 180. The luxury tax threshold is 197. And you go above that, you start paying penalties. The Brewers are never going to be able to have $180 million payrolls. They don't have a printing press printing off $20 bills in the basement like the Cubs do. I mean, the Cubs draw $17,000 a game for spring training games.
Oh, man.
$17,000, or as we call it in Maryvale, a good week.
17,000 cold fans in Arizona.
Yeah, so you know, you got to not have payroll envy. You've got to do. You know, the Brewers can't. Everybody said when the Cubs got Darvish, they, you know, David's turns must respond now. He must go get here. He has to have a response. You can't run your team responding to other teams, especially ones who can pay twice as much as you can in payroll. You got to do what's best for your team. So, you know, you never say never. And one of my favorite sayings is, you know, we'll know Jake Arrieta isn't coming to Milwaukee when he signs somewhere else. Until then, is it possible he'll come? Yeah, but Mark Atanasio would have to gulp hard if the money doesn't come down. These guys have a lot of confidence in their ability to make pitchers they have better. And David Stearns and Craig Counsell would be happy to remind you that nobody thought their pitching staff last year would be worth the darn.
Right.
And they finished fifth in the league. So they like their first three. And then if Suter comes through and pitches anywhere like he did last year, then they'll try to get one more starter out of the group of Miley, Gallardo, and Guerra. And then they're going to look at Jimmy Nelson as a midseason acquisition. You know, they're hoping to get him back no later than the All-Star break and hopefully something approaching the way he was throwing last year. You never know after a major shoulder surgery. But if they do, it would be like trading for, you know, a top-notch starting pitcher. So, you know, their problem last year when they faded in the second half is they stopped scoring runs. Their pitching kind of kept them in it as long as they could before they just got exhausted and the relievers had to pitch too much because the rotation was hurt. But it was their offense that caused them to slide this year. And that's why they went and got Kane and Yelich and not Darvish and Arrieta.
Right. So, and one of the guys you mentioned, Ryan Braun, is one of the other big storyline is the possibility that he plays a little bit at first base this year to try and keep him in the lineup when, you know, depending on matchups and everything. He did see his first spring training action on Monday. It was in the outfield, and something I hadn't considered, that maybe his back is going to keep him from being the type of guy who can take a bunch of grounders every day, and maybe that limits the amount of time that he can play at first base. Todd, what are you looking for out of this experiment? I mean, do you imagine this is something that's going to stick? It sure seems like a logical idea if it can work. And I mean, we've seen him on the infield before. It's sort of an iffy proposition, but first base is sort of the spot that everybody assumes you dump your worst infielder and just because he's got a bat, you just let him go. So what are you looking for out of this?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. We were talking about that on the drive home today. It's not that easy. I mean, when you look at a guy like Jesus Aguilar last year, who played a lot of first base, you know, big lumbering guy who weighed in at 300 pounds, he's a pretty skilled defensive player. He was really good at turning the 3-6-3 double play. He had good range. There's a lot of factors that go into playing first base. You've got to know how to play bunts in a multitude of ways. You have to be able to play shifts where you're shifted weight towards second base. You've got to hold guys on. You have to know what cutoffs are. It's a totally different story than basically trying to run down fly balls and get the ball into the infield as quick as possible. So it's stuff that you know, Ryan Braun has not had to think of since 2007. So it's going to take a while, I think, for the transition to happen. we had a pretty good talk with him today after the game, and he brought all this stuff up, and he was the one who broached the issue with his back, you know, just being careful. Obviously, he's pretty hypersensitive with it as far as, you know, not wanting to take any steps backward and miss any time or even tweak it. Anybody who's had back problems knows that's not a good thing. So, you know, I think they're just going to they're gonna give him opportunities. It sounds like Wednesday is going to be the day that he's going to go out there first and just see how he does, see what he can do out there. He's definitely open-minded about it. I asked him today specifically if he was looking forward to it, if he thought it was going to be fun, and he said, yeah, it's a new challenge and something that he is looking forward to trying. Best case scenario, it goes well, and you can go into the season counting on him to be able to play first base against some left-handed pitchers and give Eric Thames a day off. Where does that leave Jesus Aguilar? I don't know, but it's a good problem to have. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does here. I'll be interested to see how many starts he gets at first base, how many innings he plays. But I certainly don't think he's going to be standing out there taking 100 ground balls a day or anything like that. They'll be probably pretty judicious with it and see where it goes. But it's definitely one of the more interesting storylines we have down here this spring.
Tom, you wrote about Brett Suter, who's probably the candidate for the best shape of my life guy in spring training this year for the Brewers.
Jesus Aguilar would take issue with that, I just have to say. Oh. He looks pretty good.
My apologies to Jesus, but you know that seems to happen every year, and every year there's also a couple guys that pop up that maybe Brewers fans weren't counting on that sort of rise up and take maybe the 24th, 25th spot on the roster. So who might be those guys? I know Eric Thames ended up having a great year last year, was very popular. Steven Vogt came on midway through the season, was very popular. I really like the signings that they've got for the bullpen. Matt Albers, because I am partial to the larger athletes, I am a big fan of that signing, and he seems like a great guy from the interviews I've heard of him. So who are some of the guys that you think are rising up that might be those fan favorites this year, or guys who have a chance to really open up some eyes?
Well, you mentioned Brent Suter, and the Brewers are very high on him. You know, we probably should not be surprised by a guy that has a degree from Harvard, but he's like always trying to figure out ways to beat you, you know. And so last year he was having trouble getting the third time through the order. So he set up a home gym in his basement in Cincinnati, lifted weights, you know, religiously 5 times a week, and put on 20 pounds of muscle. This guy, you know, is a pretty wiry guy. But you can see his shoulders are a little broader and bigger this year. And, you know, he didn't do that to try to get his fastball, which, by the way, tops out at 85, 86. He didn't do that to try to get it over 90. He did it just to try to eliminate the fatigue factor, especially over the course of a long season. And so he's always trying to get better. You know, he's a very unique individual on the mound. As I just mentioned, he does not throw hard. Average fastball is in the 90-91 range, so he's about 5 clicks below that. But you know, he'll quick pitch you. He is a pace of play absolute idol.
Right.
You know, the way he moves the game on, he makes you very uncomfortable. Guys step out on him. He'll pitch up in the strike zone, which guys who don't throw hard usually are afraid to do. And he just this year he's working on a changeup. He wants to get some. He struck out a guy today on a pretty good changeup. So the guy's always thinking, and that's why the Brewers, you know, aren't ready to overpay for anybody left on the free agent market. If a bargain comes their way, they'll consider it. Well, they think Suter, you know, is going to be in their starting rotation, and then they'd only have to fill one more spot. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of other new guys around. You mentioned they have two veterans in their bullpen now that they didn't have last year. Albers, who's a righty, and Boone Logan, who's a lefty. But you know, let's see if Corey Knebel can even approach the year he had after he took over as closer last year. He was one of the best strikeout guys in baseball. So, you know, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, they got way more players than they have spots to play them. And that's a good thing. I was laughing with Craig Counsell the other day. I told him I've been covering Major League Baseball over 30 years. I'm still waiting for the first manager to step up to me and say, I wish they'd stop giving me so many good players.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's close down the podcast with some quick hitters, just some short thoughts. You guys got a chance to see Shohei Ohtani from the Angels. He made his he made his spring training debut against the Brewers. What were your thoughts there? I know the players saw, they thought his fastball was a little flat, but obviously he's more than just a one pitch type of pitcher. What did you see there?
Let's be more specific. I saw Shohei Ohtani. Tom saw a big post.
I saw that.
If he saw his tweet, you know, anybody who saw his tweet, that was pretty good.
Yeah. Obstructed view, euchre seat in the press box. So
sources told me he pitched that day.
Very small press box jammed with a large contingent of Japanese media. So it was not the most comfortable few hours we spent. But all kidding aside, I mean, it's tough to tell from one outing, his first outing. You know, the guys that we talked to, you mentioned what they said, basically. I was talking with Brett Phillips this morning, and he couldn't believe how much feedback he got about his kitchen sink comment from the clubhouse after the game. And I told him that pretty much anything he says is funny, and people find it funny, so that's why, so don't take it personal. But I don't know, it's going to be interesting seeing a guy pitch, hit. I mean, it's been a long, long time since anybody's been able to do that successfully. But, you know, I guess let them try it, see how it goes. If it doesn't go well, then you say, hey, pick one or the other and go from there. But it was at least interesting to be there and to kind of witness the madness firsthand.
What? And if I could just add this, JR, I was watching some film of him earlier today. He batted today for the first time. He served as DH for the Angels in a game. And I noticed when he got on base, he had the world's largest oven mitt on his right hand on the bases because they are not going to let him injure his fingers sliding into a base. So Martha Stewart would be very jealous of the size oven mitt that Mr. Ohtani was working with today. I don't think he was baking any muffins, but they didn't want his hand to get stepped on either.
Does he have to wear a jacket on the bases too? I know he's not pitching while he's hitting, but still, isn't that the rule where the pitcher's got to wear a jacket on the bases?
I think with him, they're just wrapping bubble wrap around him when he's on the base.
They should. I mean, they should. Can't they do like even in spring training? Can't they? Because it's spring training, can't they just have somebody run for him? I mean, they don't really need him out there, do they? Running the bases. I guess eventually they will.
Ghost runner, right?
Yeah, yeah, ghost runner. Why not?
They play a little loose with the rules sometimes in spring training, but we haven't gotten to that looseness yet.
Got it. So you mentioned.
And let's face it. During the year, he's gonna have to run the bases, and let's not forget Jimmy Nelson blew his shoulder out diving back in the first base at Wrigley Field, not throwing a baseball.
Yeah, I think we all have that image burned into our brains. What's next? You mentioned Brett Phillips. What's next for him? Because now they got all these outfielders. I mean, can they don't want to send him back to AAA, do they? He's proven so much there, and I don't know. I don't know if he's going to make it as the fifth outfielder on this team unless Keon Broxton goes somewhere. Like, what's the plan with him? Do you guys think?
Well, it's going to be real hard for them to make this club if they don't trade some outfielders. And, you know, they have a big catchphrase in the organization, preserving depth. And that means don't let guys get away into another organization. So he has a minor league option left. So does Keon Broxton. So you have to assume those two guys' jobs are in jeopardy on the 40-man roster. And Keon Broxton was the starting center fielder last year and a 2020 guy. He did strike out a ton, but still – that generally doesn't get you sent down to the minors. And Brett Phillips is, you know, there now that they traded Brenson and Monte Harrison in the Yelich trade, he's their top outfield prospect. And he's got a lot of ability, but they're not going to let him rot on the bench in the major leagues. They play him every day. So, you know, we're supposed to be unbiased, but if you've ever been around Brett Phillips, you want him around to ask questions, and thus you get your kitchen sink answers and who knows what else.
Your Macho Man Randy Savage impersonations and stories. He's a gold mine for us, for sure.
Yes. Jonathan Villar is somebody that a lot of people were down on after his season last year. Maybe not even from what you've seen in spring training, but just what you know of him and having seen him the last couple of years, I think of him as a pretty good bounce back candidate. I think that guy is probably not as bad as he was last season, maybe not as good as he was the year before, but somewhere in the middle, I got to think, is where we're going to find Jonathan Villar. Do you guys see it similarly?
Yeah, I think Tom actually asked that exact question to Craig Counsell last week. You know, he was really, really good in 2016, really, really bad in 2017. And as they say, you take the two extremes and usually the truth lies somewhere in between. So I think the Brewers would definitely be happy with something in between there. The Brewers obviously have other options they can look at. Eric Sogard is back. Hernan Perez has told us that he wants to try to become the starting second baseman. I don't think that happens just because Craig Counsell values his versatility so much. But, you know, the way Craig Counsell shuffles his lineups and likes to get guys playing time, certainly could see something like almost like a three-man rotation there, where maybe VR plays most of the time or two-thirds of the time, or however you want to split it up. Sogard and Perez split those other at-bats, or something else. If, you know, Sogard has a great spring, maybe he opens as the starter, doesn't play well early in the season, then VR gets a shot. I mean, they have options there. So, but there's no question that when VR is on and clicking on all cylinders, he's pretty much a prototypical leadoff type guy, but with power, switch hitter. We all saw his travails on the bases over the years, but he still can be an effective pest on the bases. So I think that's a good way to put it, a bounce back candidate. It's going to be interesting to watch if he can actually put it all together and become something close to what he was in 2016.
Which leads, JR, to this chicken or egg poll question for the first podcast. Who made the bigger mistake last spring? Jonathan VR turning down a $23 million contract extension offer from the Brewers, or the Brewers for making it? Who made the bigger mistake?
Well, I think that's a good one when you consider you have to factor in the Brewers also moved on from Scooter Gennett, which had other baggage attached to it as well. It was sort of a move that made sense, but you saw what he did in Cincinnati. So now the Brewers make that offer and move on, and Jeanette has a great year in Cincinnati. I know people are down on that decision, but I don't know. That's serendipitous that it worked out for the Brewers, at least to this point. Maybe that contract offer comes back around when VR is the guy doing 2020 stuff this year. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, because Todd will vouch for the fact that when Gene Segura turned down a similar offer early in his Brewers career, I proclaimed, well, he'll never see that money again. And in a way, I was right, because instead of $30 million, he got like $70 million.
Yeah, right. The Brewers, though, haven't been burned by that very often. They haven't had a lot of those contract situations where they've offered big deals and people have taken them up on it, and then it hasn't worked out. I mean, Jeff Suppan, I guess, is the free agent signing that everyone will point to, but they haven't been burned that often. With Prince Fielder, they got lucky that he didn't sign long term with them because of the injuries and things of that nature. So they've had okay luck that way. Last question, kind of addressed it earlier, a sleeper to make this team. I mean, you said there's so many players for these spots. I don't know if there's going to be really any chance for surprises. You wrote about Nate Orff and Kyle Wren today. Nate Orff would have a better chance than Wren of making the roster, but is there anybody that you think maybe could be that versatile guy that we're not talking about or know about right now that could come out of here and make this roster?
Well, with their current number of players in camp, there's not a lot of sleeper candidates. If guys start getting hurt, or they make some trades, that would happen. So, you know, out of the bullpen, you know, let's see what happens there. They've got some very interesting candidates. You know, I've been working on a story on Ernesto Friere. He used to be one of the top closers in the major leagues, and he came upon hard times, and now he's trying to jump back in. But Todd, I mean, do you have an obvious sleeper candidate? I mean, we're not in real big sleeper mode with this team right now.
I mean, the only other really interesting like positional battle that's kind of up for grabs is maybe the backup catcher spot. You know, does Jet Bandy all of a sudden have a great spring and make the Brewers think twice about paying Stephen Vogt $3 million to be the backup? You know, does Stephen Vogt have a tough spring throwing base runners out again, like he did when he came to the Brewers last year, and, you know, kind of give the Brewers pause to keeping him? It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Vogt obviously has a lot of traits that the Brewers like, left-handed hitter. He's got some power. He's good at calling games. He's got that veteran presence. But that throwing arm last year was really – it's hard to overlook, and teams ran wild on him. He did a lot of work in the offseason to try to improve upon that. We haven't had a chance really to see it put into practice yet in games. I'm sure that's coming. But with Jet Bandy being out of options, they traded Martin Maldonado for him, who wound up being a Gold Glover. I'm sure the Brewers would like to be able to show something for that trade. And although Bandy, you know, I don't think he looks anything like, you know, a future starting catcher or anything like that, maybe he becomes a solid backup and he can play every fourth, fifth day behind Manny Pena. So to me, that's kind of the one battle that I'm looking at this point behind Manny Pena is that backup catcher spot. What happens with that?
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the first shot at the Reborn Milwaukee Brewers Milwaukee Journal Sentinel podcast. Stay warm down there, and we'll be chatting with you again soon.
Sounds good, JR. Take it easy.
Thanks, JR.
The Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast hopes to be with you at least one more time before the season begins. Then we're hoping to record something new for every homestand this season as the Brewers look to get back to the playoffs for the first time since 2011. I'll be hosting the shows. I'll have some exclusive interviews for you as well as some other content along with chats with Tom Hondricourt and Todd Rosiak. For Tom and Todd, I'm JR Radcliffe. We'll be back again with you very soon. Thank you.